Dr. John McGuire is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell, you've been so quiet.
Well, thinking about the what I would characterize as the integration, bringing those disparate things together, the two major areas you mentioned, but lots of other pieces in that. And I think of that in the context of a body politic, a political entity, a community that seems in many ways to have disintegrated over the last, since really the late 60s. It seems that a good deal of the work you have done since then, since the late 60s, has been to, from the bottom up, in many ways, to try to reintegrate, to bring not only people together, but different perspectives, different disciplines, different ideas, different thought processes.
I'm to comment on that, Bill, and I'll give it a stab to say that it dawned on me, and I think maybe a liberating moment came when I realized that of the institutions in our society, the university was an ideal forum for this gathering. And people rarely talk about the convening power of a university. But universities still have enough stature in our society that most people, if invited to come to them and share their thinking and their being with people, will accept your invitation. So that over a hallmark of Claremont, where I was for 17 years, became the steady procession of fascinating people, activists, artists, coming there. And talking about, I mentioned the first topic we ever did, the arts and politics. We did every conceivable topic in the meantime, technology, globalization, you name it. But the last one, the final one, was called The Social Responsibility of the Arts. And that captured those twin impulses again that I'm talking about. So it dawned on me also something I think that most universities need to be reminded of, and that is they're situated in real live communities, and that if you want to engage, you don't have to go to Timbuktu. You can go three blocks down the street.
You can walk out the gates.
And and in fact, we're much more interested in going and studying Timbuktu, going half a world away than half a block away to engage people. But we began to develop then, I thought it was a little arch to call it a civically engaged university. That's what the pundits call it. But we did two things, I think, that were interesting. One, constantly bringing to the university people who weren't scholars only or weren't scholars at all, but were important agents, movers, actors in our society. And the second was throwing open the doors to the community. I once said this university ought to be like a public library. People of all ages ought to be able to come in here, stay as long or as short as they want, get what they want, and make the practice of coming in and out all the time. And that audience, then, if you take that emblem or that image seriously, has to be a local group.
We talked not long ago with a friend of ours who runs the High Museum here. And he talks about they're on a major building campaign, but he talks about turning the High Museum into what he characterizes as a secular cathedral, a place where people not only come for events or come for shows, but that they come anytime because there is this constant base of, in his case, art and other things, music mm-hmm. and other kinds of things, food, whatever. But that there is a focal point in the community where people from a wide range of experiences, economic backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, educational backgrounds, feel comfortable and are willing to and want to
right.
come into that space. And it sounds like that's part of what you were doing in Claremont.
I wouldn't have called ours a cathedral. It was more like a cafe. But it was located at a central place, and we tried in symbolically and actually to have the doors open as often as we could.
Claremont is really quite unusual in American higher education. I mean, it even has its own distinction within the Carnegie Commission's litany. How do you, in short course, describe how different Claremont is from just your regular run-of-the-mill university?
Claremont is the only instance in the United States whose founders set out to consciously create a consortium. Most consortia come together out of economic efficiency considerations or whatever. Claremont was invented to be like that. It was the vision of one man who was the president of the only college in town in the 19th century, Pomona, who went to Oxford, fell in love with the Oxford-like notion of the university as a cluster of independent colleges, and so said that Claremont should invent one every 10 years as long as it lasted. And for astonishing, right on course in the middle part of the last century, that is to say, all the way through, we added a college every 10 years. So today in Claremont, there are five independent undergraduate colleges, and now not one but two graduate schools. The brooding presence is the Claremont Graduate University.
Brooding, as in well, making new babies. Brooding. You sit gently on the eggs.
At any rate, one of the things that in which I took great pride and pleasure was the establishment in my final year of a new institution. I was there for 17 years, and I feared of all the things they wanted me to do, that was the one on which I would fail. But sure enough, in the final year, the Keck Foundation gave a $50 million gift on the condition that we match it and create a new center of biotechnology, the Keck Graduate Institute of Applied Life Sciences, which is a wedding of engineering, biology, and management. And what it does is train the next generation of leaders of this runaway growth biotechnology industry. So the students who come there actually study both biology, technical bench science, and management on the thought that someday they're going to run companies who, and the things that those companies do will have to be understood. So Claremont is a fascinating consortium. The years I was there, in fact, I was the last in a series by design where the person who held the job I did was at once president of the group, of the consortium, and of the graduate activity. At the time I stepped down in 1998 from that job, it was decided that Claremont had reached a stage now that it needed one person to run the business functions for the whole group, $50-60 million operation every year, and another person to devote himself or herself fully to the work of the graduate university. So I have to say to friends, when I stepped down, they had to have two people at least to replace me.
Well, I'm confident that that is the case. This is John McGuire. Let's go away for a moment because I want to come back and talk more about higher education because you've done other things as well that are very important. Please be with us when we return, Bill Russell, Paula Gordon, John McGuire, to the Paula Gordon Show.